welcome back to the show, Hannah Reed from Pages, Places and Plates. Welcome back.
Hi.
It's lovely to have you back on board again. We've had a short break from reviewing the books you've read, but we're back now and we're back via Skype, so it might be a little bit wobbly at times, but let's see how it goes.
Okay.
Cool. Right. So what are your book choices for this show?
Right, I've got three books for this show. So first of all, The Gift of Happiness by Holly Martin. We've got Through the Wall by Carolyn Corcoran. And we've got Salvador Dali at Home by Jackie DeBerk.
Let's start with Holly Martin's book. What's it about?
So this one is the sequel to The Little Village of Happiness. And to catch up on that, a woman called Willow decided to quit everything and move down to a kind of manufactured village called Happiness, where all the houses were going for free on the premise that the person who was moving in would kind of contribute some sort of service or business to the community. So the first book kind of established the building of the community and the initial issues with it, and as you can imagine, there were quite a lot.
Yeah.
And then this one, now we've got to the point where Willow settled in and she's all happy, she's at home, and she encourages her friend Ruby to come along. Ruby isn't sure, but she decides that she has nothing to lose, so she might as well go and trial the Village of Happiness and see kind of how it goes, really. And then it's called The Gift of Happiness because it's a Christmas book.
Oh,
and Ruby's speciality is making Christmas decorations, so she decides to open an all-year-round Christmas shop. And basically the story is following Ruby's journey into the village and kind of how she copes with it and some of the inner demons that kind of come her way, and there's obviously a lot of romance in it as well.
So when you say it's obviously a romance genre book,
yeah,
but you've also got the overarching theme of romance and Christmas as well.
Yeah, so it's a Christmas romance really, which is quite nice. So it's really cozy, really festive. The romance involved is she meets a man called Jacob, who is actually Willow's partner's brother, so there's a big kind of link there. She isn't interested in a relationship, she's completely fighting the concept of it, but the story kind of explores whether she's able to do that and also the reasons why she's fighting it, which are quite interesting.
Okay, did you actually read this over Christmas?
No, I didn't. Weirdly, I read it while I was in Fuerteventura.
Oh, so it was very hot out.
Reading this Christmas book in the like blazing desert sun.
What drew you to it? Was it just Holly Martin or because you wanted to read the next instalment?
Yeah, both of those, because I really loved The Little Village of Happiness. I think that was probably my favourite one she's written so far. I do like her writing style. It's just really easy to read. It's really chatty, really light. But she does touch upon they're like heavier topics. She doesn't have a heavy way of writing about them, if that makes sense.
Would you be able to talk about the heavier topic, or would that be giving it away?
Yeah. So without going into too much detail, obviously one of the heavier topics is fear of commitment. It wasn't one that I related to personally, because that's not me at all.
Mm-hmm.
So I think for that reason I found it less enjoyable than the first one. Just because Willow, the first one, is like me. So I completely related to her. She's a complete dreamer. She's got an attitude of, yeah, everything will be fine, even when it's clearly not going to be. So she's a little bit too positive about things like that sometimes, and she just wants everything to work out, and she's very creative as well. Whereas Ruby is creative in that sense, but she has this massive fear of commitment. But mm-hmm. The other theme that comes through is grief, and that's obviously a very heavy topic.
So what stands out for you with this one? What's its takeaway message for you?
Well, I think the takeaway message, kind of with all of Holly's books, is listen to your heart and stop trying to put things off. And also listen to other people. A lot of her, like the books I've read, the main characters maybe aren't listening to who they should be. They're fighting something. They're not maybe dealing with the feelings that are inside them. So that was definitely something that kind of really struck me when I read it. Holly has a very fun writing style, and I like that. And it starts off really fun as well. As Ruby enters the village, there's a bit of a, she makes a bit of a scene basically, and she hopes no one has seen it, but it's just the most ridiculous situation. So stuff like that is really nice within the book.
I do like that when you hope nobody's noticed it, yet everybody notices.
Yeah, and it really brings something for the character. It really showcases them in a human way, which I loved. It made Ruby really real.
So who was your favourite character and why?
Well, the thing is, I still love Willow and Andrew the most. Unfortunately, they weren't in the book as much because it obviously wasn't focusing on them. Ruby is a great main character, and Jacob's interesting as well. But again, with the themes, I didn't quite connect to them as much as I did Willow and Andrew. Uh-huh. So I'd say they were still my favourite main characters, but there are lots of lovely little minor characters dotted around. And I can't remember the names off the top of my head, but there's quite a hilarious post office owner and general shop. Who always comes out with the most inappropriate questions, and her questioning actually kind of makes Ruby consider things as well. She's kind of pivotal in a small way.
Okay, that's
so I really liked her.
That's quite a good character to have, isn't it? Because you've got somebody that's not huge to the role, but as you say, pivotal to the plot.
But she's a minor character, and it's her kind of pivotalness, if that's the word, is quite subtle.
It is now, Hannah.
Yes.
So presumably it's safe to say you're definitely a Holly Martin fan.
Yeah, I am, yeah. I think The Little Village of Happiness is still my favourite. So I'm waiting for one to beat that. But I did enjoy this one, and I know that the Christmas genre is really big. It's not a genre I'm massively into, but I have found myself warming to Christmas stories recently, which is funny because I'm not really a Christmas person at all. But for people that absolutely love Christmas, this is like the perfect book.
Excellent stuff. Is there anything about the book you didn't like?
I think just the fact that I didn't connect with it so much. It was still written really well. The plot was really good. It just didn't grab me quite as much, but I think that was a connection issue more than anything. So I do like character. I think characters, I like to be able to relate to them in some way. So maybe not having that meant I didn't enjoy it quite as much. But it's still definitely a positive read for me. But I know that Holly has got another book that's going to be released in April, but that one isn't anything to do with this series. Oh. That's a completely new concept.
Right, so thanks for that review. Let's move on to Through the Wall by Caroline Cochran.
So this was one that I got through NetGalley. It was one of those ones that I applied for thinking, oh, I'll never get that. That looks too good. And then I got it. I was like, oh, wow, I get to read that. And this was one I actually read over Christmas, and it's the least Christmassy, least festive, and least positive story ever.
You're all upside down, aren't you?
I just choose completely the wrong time to read things, I think. But this was during the festive period, but it's a really incredible book. So this one, unlike the last one, is a psychological thriller.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a book that's written in a couple of different perspectives. So you've got the main character, Lexi. She basically is perceived by everyone as having the perfect life. She lives with her husband, Tom, in this wonderful flat that they've barely had to pay anything for. She has a great job where she gets to work from home. Tom earns a lot of money, and it all looks wonderful from the outside. But as we kind of explore through Lexi's story, it's obvious that there are some real issues there. She's struggling with some things, Tom's struggling with some things, and it's not quite as perfect as it seems. The main theme there is the fertility issues that she's struggling with. So that's a really big thing and something the author herself has actually struggled with. So the other side is we follow her neighbour, Harriet. Harriet is currently processing a breakup with someone who she thought was the love of her life. And she has a history of quite severe mental health issues. Harriet sees Lexi's perfect life on the outside and decides that's what she wants. And she starts going to some very interesting measures in order to kind of get the life that Lexi has, which impact Lexi's own life quite significantly.
So what's today that you'll take away?
It was so emotionally gripping and disturbing. It was really good. Like it's the sort of book that makes you feel really uneasy as you're reading it. Like Harriet's presence is almost real, So basically in the book, Harriet at points kind of starts to input herself into Lexi's life, but very subtly, and you really feel like she's, there. It's so creepy. The writer's writing is just so powerful, and then she's really good at kind of making her writing all consuming, and she builds up tension. I mean, I'd say the last 20% or so was so anxiety inducing that I had to read the whole bit in one go, because I just couldn't stop thinking about it. And I remember I'd stopped at 80% and I thought, right, I'm going to go to bed. And then I thought, no, I have to finish it. I need to know what happens. And usually I'm quite good at just putting a book down, but I just felt really anxious, like I needed to know, because it could have gone one of two ways. It was really powerful. I mean, I'd say it's the sort of book that's potentially triggering to anyone that has severe mental health issues or has fertility issues or something like that, because the topics are explored quite in depth. Okay. So it is a book that I think maybe some people should steer clear of, but for the majority of people, it is really a really gripping book.
So with your writer's mind on, was there anything that stood out that you didn't enjoy about it, apart from the anxiety-inducing aspect?
Not really. I mean, I loved that, even though I hated it, if that makes sense. It's like, if you can make your readers feel like that, that's great, in a way, even though it's not. But you know what I mean.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, it's... I think the only thing I didn't like is that Lexi's parents were, I think, kind of quite key as to why she is the way she is. And they weren't really mentioned that much. Like, there were a couple of Skype calls with them, but that was it. And the only thing I can really think of that it would have improved, it would have been more exploration of the parents.
But you've not read anything from this author before, have you?
No, I haven't. No, I will definitely be reading more from her. 100%, it was really good.
That's always a good thing to hear, isn't it? Yes. We authors do try very hard, don't we? And when you hear that, it's really good. Your next book is slightly different. It's non-fiction. It's Salvador Dali at Home by Jackie de Burka. So obviously it's non-fiction. It's a fascinating title. How does it embody the content?
Well, so Salvador Dali at Home is part of a series. So there's three others, I believe, in the At Home series. This one is basically a very, very comprehensive biography of Salvador Dali's life. Not just his art, but his whole life, and even his legacy afterwards as well. It's fascinating, and it draws from a lot of different sources. So it draws from other biographies, history, obviously, and things that have been discovered from that, and also his own semi-fictional autobiography, which is confused to art critics and artists since it was written, to be honest.
I mean, I know a little bit about Salvador Dali. I think some of the famous pictures with like the melted clock picture. Isn't there one with an animal with extraordinarily long slim legs?
Elephants.
Yes, that's it. So I know a couple of the famous pictures, but I don't know very much about the person himself. Certainly, I don't know about his legacy either, so tell us about that as well.
His paintings hold an incredible amount of meaning, and every single tiny detail relates to something within his life in some way, or some message he wanted to portray. And to be honest, even after reading it, it's still really difficult to interpret his paintings. He had an incredible mind, and he had a lot going on in it, and his art is just like, I did actually study his art for GCSE art, which is what got me into surrealism and his artwork, basically. But behind the scenes, though, I mean, a lot of people who know of Dali as an artist will know him as this extravagant artist with crazy ideas, and he did a lot of furniture pieces and sculptures, and they were all completely bizarre. And then that's what people remember him for. But really, he was really introverted, very paranoid, a very gentle, kind person, with a lot going on in his life. And this book really focuses on that sort of stuff, which is nice, because even though I'd studied him, I didn't know about all that. Behind, and I didn't realise, like, the landscapes in his paintings, they're all based on his homeland, and I didn't realise quite how significant that was to him. I thought he was just choosing a landscape that worked, you know, but there's a reason why it's those orange undulating hills in every painting. It just gave a lot of insight into the artist, and I think this sort of book is like really good for anyone that does have an interest in his art. So I just learned so much.
Good, it's brilliant, that's lovely to hear. What does De Burka bring to this book specifically?
Well, she just brings so much knowledge, and she is really comprehensive. Like, even though the chapters are relatively short, she's crammed so much information into them, which is really good. She's clearly done a lot of research, and she really knows the topic inside out, which is good. But this one is about him, and it is, you know, it focuses on things like his marriage, his childhood, his dip into politics, and his sudden religious changes, things like that. His legacy, as I said, kind of how he's impacted people afterwards.
It's certainly stuff that I never knew about at all, so that's interesting. Yeah. I mean, I learned from your reviews, that's brilliant.
I also liked how it was presented. It had lots of, like, it was a really good quality hardcover book, which obviously does make it a little bit more expensive than other books I've reviewed, but I think it's totally worth it because the picture quality is just beautiful. You've got, like, photos from his past, his paintings, and it's just lovely glossy pages, you know. It's like a real book you'd treasure.
Just out of sort of a slight aside, birth, but when did he live? 20s, 30s?
So he was born in 1904.
Ah, okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Brilliant. So art, like the literary world, is subjective. So what do you think will draw book lovers to this one?
I think having an interest in Dali, or at least having an interest in surrealism.
Okay.
I think it's quite a niche book, so I think the people that want to read it will probably seek it out for its knowledge. It's rather than, you know, a lot of the books I read are novels, and they kind of have quite a broad audience. I think this has quite a niche audience, but anyone with an interest in art, and I mean, it would be really good resource for anyone studying him.
Yeah, yeah.
Particularly anyone studying him at A-level or university level, because it just contains so much knowledge. I think it will appeal to anyone who's studying him, or anyone that appreciates his artwork, or really anyone kind of interested in Spanish art or surrealism or anything like that.
Listening to that review, you know, I'd be drawn to that. That would be quite an interesting one to just, you know, dip in and out of.
Yeah, and it is the kind of book you can do that with as well, which is quite nice. It was really interesting reading so much text in it's like a square shape, quite a large hardcover book, which is, like, you have to kind of have a lot of lap space if you're reading it. but that was nice. It was a really nice kind of read, and I read this in between Christmas and New Year, and I set aside a little bit of time each evening to just read one chapter with a coffee or hot chocolate or something, and it was just really easy to dip in and out of.
Oh, wonderful. I like the fact that you said not to take what he says as gospel, because he twists it. I mean, that says quite a lot about a character, doesn't it, when they
twist it. Was interesting because he was really introverted, but he was a complete performer at the same time. He loved to kind of grip a crowd, and he loved to have a presence, but on his own he was so quiet and gentle. He's a real conflicting character. I think that's why I'm so drawn to him, because he's just so bizarre. He doesn't fit stereotypes. I think the persona that we know of fits a complete stereotype, his extroverted type, but then when I was reading it, I felt like I really got to know the true Dali.
Oh, gosh.
And even though the performer aspect is part of his personality, it's also kind of a persona. Because he wasn't like that at home.
It sounds like you just sort of spent some time with him.
Yeah, it feels like I did. And to be honest, I think I would have been quite good friends with him if I'd have kind of grown up near him. He was a really interesting character, and definitely had his demons. Not perfect by any means.
Don't you find, though, that so many creatives in whatever genre it's they're creative in, they've all got some demon that they're fighting?
Yes. Yeah. It makes for very good art.
Doesn't it? Yeah, if that's definitely literary or artistic or music or anything.
And then Dali even had a method of creating art where I'd mentioned he was paranoid, where he would basically induce as much paranoia as possible, and he felt it took him almost to like a higher realm where he could create art directly from his subconscious.
Gosh.
So a lot of his paintings come from that. Possibly not a technique I'd want to try with my own art.
No, but it does make sense when a lot of when you're trying to interpret dreams, Dali is mentioned. Yeah. So that does make some sense, doesn't it? Right, so thank you for that. Now, how can authors get in touch with you for a review of their books?
Okay, if anyone wants to get in touch with me, my email address is pagesplacesandplates@gmail.com. That's the best way. always read my reviews policy on my website, which is now www.pagesplacesandplates.com. It's got a new design, but all the posts that I've done before are all up on there, so you can still see all of my previous reviews on there. If you have a look on there, you'll see my reviews policy, which basically explains what sorts of genres I review, things I want authors to be aware of before they get in contact with me, that sort of thing. So if you are an author and looking to get your book reviewed, then definitely check that out first.
Thank you for those in-depth reviews of those three books. It's actually been about a year, isn't it, since we've been
doing this? My blog started at the beginning of February last year, so...
Hasn't that gone quick,
crazy, and I'm booked up all until May now for book reviews, so...
Oh, well done you.
Yeah.
Excellent stuff. Well, thank you so much for joining me on Skype this evening.
Thank you.
And we'll catch up very soon and do another one.